Hello, language lovers. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Speaking Tongues, the podcast in conversation with multilinguals. I'm your host, El Sharice. Today, I'm bringing you the sixth episode in this summer's summer school series, where all summer long, we're having conversations with language teachers. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Maria, a Spanish teacher in Ireland and an embodied Spanish coach. I really enjoyed connecting with Maria as we discussed methods for learning another language. As you will hear in this episode, she's been able to coach her students through the written word and help them to develop their own voices when communicating in Spanish. She helps her students to take ownership of the Spanish language through writing and poetry. One thing that I love about the way languages are taught now is how much emphasis there is on developing one's own character and taking the time to feel your way through the journey of learning a language. It doesn't have to be a painful experience, and it doesn't have to be all about memorizing grammar. Language learning can be fun, and Maria's methodology is proof of that. So in this episode, you'll hear both of our thoughts on these topics, plus we also talk about translation in literature, the world-famous Camino in Spain, and our love for traveling the world. And also, as of this publication time, Maria's book, Weaving Words, The Alchemy of Language, is available now on Amazon. To find Maria's book and to get in touch with her to start your Spanish-speaking journey, be sure to click the links in the show notes. Vale, let's chat. Hi, Maria. How are you?
Hello. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm happy to have you, and thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Speaking Tongues. I like to start each episode with somewhat of the same question, and that is, what is your first language, and how many languages do you currently speak?
Okay. Well, my native language is Spanish, and I speak currently English and French. Those are the only two languages I am able to communicate in. I have some basics and some knowledge about other languages. Three more. So Irish, German, Chinese, and Arabic. But I wouldn't be able to communicate to speak in them.
I have a few of those of my own, so I understand. I understand what you mean. So you grew up in Spain, correct?
Yeah.
And what languages did you hear spoken growing up? Was it just Spanish, or did you hear any other languages spoken in your home or in your community?
Yeah, it was only Spanish. I am from a small town in the middle of Spain, which means that we only speak Spanish or Castilian, as we call it. Which is Spanish that we know. There are other languages in other areas of Spain, but I have never been exposed to them growing up.
And what was your experience like in school learning languages? Did you have an opportunity to learn English or French when you were in school, or any other languages?
Yeah, well, we had to learn English, so that was obligatory since primary school, I think. When I was 7 or 8 years old, we started learning English, but unfortunately, it was really, really bad teachers or the way English was taught. It was just a disaster. It was horrible. So in a way, even though I've learned English since forever, that's the language I've struggled the most.
Mm. So tell me about that. Why do you think that it was an inefficient way of learning English when you were so young?
Well, one of the things is that the teachers were all native Spanish speakers, which it's not necessarily a problem. Okay. So, but they, they never lived in any English speaking country. The pronunciation they had was really, really bad, and the lessons were never in English. So they were all in Spanish, but yeah, there were some, the exercises that we had to do, the drill, the boring exercises, complete with a verb, complete the gap with a verb. Those were reading in English, or when we did a listening activity, obviously, but all the communication during the class was in Spanish.
Mm.
And that's a missed opportunity. I have nothing against using the common language with the students at all when necessary, but I do believe also that the student needs to be exposed to the language as much as they can.
Right.
And that was not happening at all. I remember having to memorize these conversations, these dialogues in English, and then having to represent, like repeat like a parrot these conversations, which was painful for someone, like I am sure for many students. I am an introvert, and I used to be really, really shy. So having to do that in front of the classroom was horrible.
Yes.
I'm sure I had some trauma around that. And then it was pointless.
Right. I think that I know what you're talking about, because times that I've been in a language class to learn another language, and we have to do these, I'm also introverted too. I mean, even though I love talking to people, I am very shy and I'm very much an introvert, but having to do those role play type of conversations, first of all, the conversations are terrible.
Yeah. Like, they are.
There's no basis of reality in this conversation.
Yeah.
So you have to do it and you have to pretend like this is a normal situation. And then you really don't even want to do it on top of that too. So I completely understand. But I want to ask you, like, this really wasn't working out for you, but how were you able to, I guess, find the initiative for yourself, or how were you able to overcome these inefficiencies in your classroom to become fluent in English?
Well, that was kind of a journey. For many years, I hated English with all my being. I just didn't like it. But I happen to love languages. I happen to love Spanish language. That's what I studied in university. And love words. So then I started traveling. And I think that what happened was that in the moment I started to learn as another language, in the moment I started to learn French as an adult, I saw a different way of learning, and that was fun. That was an absolute pleasure. So in a way, I had these two ways of learning languages, and because English is a language one, I think one has to learn. If you want to travel, you need to speak English. I just forced myself into relearning the language in a much more pleasant way. And I did it by myself. And I obviously, because I was traveling, I was exposed in an immersion situation very often. But I just retrained myself into learning and do activities that I like, and just kind of guide myself to fall in love with English again. But that was because I learned French in a way that was different and that was nice and meaningful.
Right. Tell me about that. Tell me how you had this meaningful experience with learning the French language.
Well, I had nice teachers. They were some of them, they were native French speakers, but not all of them. But there was a purpose in everything we did in the context of the classroom, not like those role play conversations that you need to memorize when you're younger. So we would have role play situations, but they were meaningful. Like, you create the conversation, you have a context, you are given a context, and you manage to have a conversation. For example, that was a thing that made sense, because you are finding your own resources to express and communicate in the language. We worked a lot with real materials. That is, we worked with newspapers, or with poetry, or with novels and music. The radio, we were confronted with real materials, not fake textbooks that are creating conversations that are not, in many cases, that are outdated. Because some of the textbooks I was working with, I learned expressions, and then when I went, for example, to Ireland, people were looking at me thinking, oh, what? Is she like from the 60s? What is she talking about? So yeah, I was just confronted with materials that were real and current, and we did a lot of writing, and I think that's an important element to integrate and learn a language. Mm-hmm. And that was nice for me, just to access the language through my own writing. I was probably one of the best things I discovered.
I think that's great, because I'm noticing, I guess, as I've been learning languages for probably half my life, I'm noticing that the methods and the mindfulness behind teaching a language and learning a language has changed so much. And, you know, I've spoken to a few people who, you know, when we were kids, we had the tapes, right? The language tapes.
Yeah.
They were, you know, that was the only way, I guess, we felt like that was the proper channel to become fluent in Spanish or French or Italian, because that's really, well, in the US, that's all I remember. Those only languages I remember seeing those tapes in. But I think it's great that there's so much thought now into how to really engage people in a way that's exciting, and it's not routine. There's so many methods out there.
Yeah, and I think that's wonderful, and it's just we keep evolving. We are just learning more and more about how the brain works, how we learn, that it just makes sense to keep making the learning process evolving and try new things.
Right.
It's just we cannot be stuck in the past trying to... They were fine. They worked for a while, I guess, that those tapes were a way to learn. And I am sure people... I didn't succeed with them, but I'm sure they were fine. Like, they served a purpose for a while, but I think that now we know much more, and we have to explore new ways of learning.
Right. So tell me, do you have maybe one instance or one experience that made you realize that you wanted to learn more than one language in your life?
Yeah. I guess for me, it wasn't through being or talking to other people or wanting to talk to other people. For me, it was because I wanted to understand written word.
Mm.
I love learning, I love writing, and I love any written word manifestation. And so I realized, and I don't remember when, I think probably was high school at some point, I was exposed to a translation of a book, probably a translation, like the original would be in English, and I would have read the Spanish translation. And I realized that it was different, that it wasn't the same emotion, or probably it was a bad translation. I don't even remember the book, but I think that was one of the moments when I realized that I wanted to be able to read in the original version, in the original language. And French was one of the loves I had in the past. I loved French Francophone literature and movies, and it was the same with other languages. I just wanted to be able to read in the original version, because mm-hmm. it is different. Translations, they are always missing something, I guess.
I definitely agree, and I love that you said that, because I have a really big love of Spanish literature, and particularly like authors from Latin America. And one of the first books that I read was 100 Years of Solitude. Mm-hmm. And I read it in English. My best friend gave it to me for my birthday one year. And I love Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And I was reading this book, and I've read other books of his. And it's funny, because I don't feel like this in any other language, but in Spanish, I feel it. When I read a book that was originally written in Spanish, I feel in my soul, in my heart, like something is missing. And I can't explain it to you. And I can't say that I read a translation from any other language and I felt the same way. But when it comes to books that were originally written in Spanish, I know something is lost. I don't know what it is when it comes to Spanish language. Something in my brain says, you know, there's more to this. And I wish I could read Spanish better, because I know I'd be getting a different story, or I'd be getting a different feeling from the story.
Exactly. And that is, like, I just love that you said that, because that is my whole ethos and vision for me teaching languages, is that sometimes I feel when we teach, when we learn a language, that because we are learning it at a very intellectual level, and we are learning from by imitation, is that we are kind of translating ourselves into these new language that we are learning.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, there is something missed in that translation. That's what you were saying, that when you read a book in Spanish and then read the translation, there is something that is missing. And I think that that's because that translation is not expressing itself. It's a translation of another way of being,
right?
So I think that there is something that makes me very sad when we are learning a new language, and or I ask, for example, I can give you an example. I ask my students, let's write a poem. Like, I love poetry, and I do believe that learning a language through poetry is the way to go. So when I ask a student, hey, let's write a poem about blah, anything, or give me a story, tell me a story about this topic, there is panic. There is this immediate, no, I cannot do this. How am I going to write a poem in my language, let alone in this language I'm trying to learn?
Right.
It is impossible. But what happens when we write poetry, we are engaging language and we are engaging emotion. And I think that without emotion, there is no learning. But when And that's what happens in a translation. In a translation, there is no, the person translating is not translating their own emotion. They are translating someone else's emotion and putting it in a book.
Yeah.
And when we speak in a different language, without bringing this emotion, we are kind of, we don't even know what our images are in this new language that we are speaking. We are trying to translate the images we have in our mother language. So, for example, like I was writing about this the other day. So in Spanish, when we say that someone is blind as a bat, I think that's a correct expression in English, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Spanish, I would say estar ciego como una tapia. That means to be blind as a wall.
Okay.
So there are different images.
Right.
Right there.
Right.
Right? So a good translation for me, if I am speaking in English, I wouldn't say I am blind like a wall because you wouldn't understand.
Right.
I would have to say being blind as a bat. But that is something that generates no image for me because I haven't grown with that expression. It doesn't really bring any emotion. I think that language, when we speak language, we bring images. We evoke images in the person we are talking to. And we are talking from images that are in our consciousness in a way. It's, you know, it's something that we have experienced and seen. Or so what I like to do with my students is to bring them to get their own images in the language, to find their own way of saying things. So they don't need to learn or memorize being blind as a wall, but find their own way of expressing being blind. So being blind like what? So you are expressing and communicating that that image that you have, and you are bringing the color into the language. You are expressing really from your experience.
I think that is incredible. It's really incredible because, like you said, we think that we need to imitate, because I think that as humans, we want to fit in. We want to assimilate. We don't want to stand out. We don't want to be outside. And it's enough to try to assimilate within your own culture and having that. But when you're trying to assimilate into a culture or a language that's not your own, you kind of, you're pretending to be something that you're not. So I think that's a great approach that you have by encouraging your students to think for themselves and develop their own connections, because, you know, it must be so much more successful than just, you know, copying an accent or learning all the verbs or all the idioms and, you know, slang to try to seem like you fit in, but to actually, like understand, and gain that connection. I think that's really, really valuable.
Yeah. It's, for me, it's just that, I see languages as something that we are and we can express, right? Like that's what a language is. We learn a language because we want to express ourselves. But I find that very often, we see, or we have this idea of a foreign language, like it's not ours.
Right.
And I find that that makes me so, so sad. Yeah. Or a target language is something that you get to. I like the idea of all languages. Like I own every language I'm trying to communicate in or communicate with. So if I own the language, obviously I need to know the rules and everything, because that's the way I can have a successful conversation. But I need to find my own way of communicating myself through this language that is mine.
Right.
So I don't need to be copying the idioms that exist. Well, I can if I want, if I relate to them. And I think that's the key word. When we relate to an idiom because it makes sense to us, that's perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with that. But very often those idioms have been formed from a group of people that have a certain experience. Yeah. That I may not have experienced because I am from a different culture. So me trying to use that idiom that it doesn't evoke any emotion in me feels kind of fake, trying to imitate something that is not mine.
Right. Do you think that you feel this way, or do you think that your interest in traveling, and you've told me before we started speaking, but you told me you've traveled quite a bit. Do you feel like traveling the world has helped shape your views on language and acquiring language in this mindful way?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. More than traveling is living in the place. So for me, like if someone asked me, what's your nationality or what's your identity? I'm just going to struggle. I'm going to tell the other person, what kind of question is this? Because even if my passport says I'm Spanish, I have been living in so many different countries, and I have been living and experiencing and loving other so many cultures that those cultures are part of me as well. So I could say I am a bit French, and I'm a lot of Irish, and I am Australian, and I am those things because I have experienced them. And it is the same with languages for me. So yeah, I could travel, and there is, and I think that's these two different ways of traveling. One is you travel to a place and you see it as an external element. Mm-hmm. You see what's happening, what's going on, and it is all very interesting, but you don't take it as yours. And then there is the other way of traveling where you're just a part of that country.
Right.
Or that culture.
I think that the times that I've traveled, I love and I hate saying this, because I always feel like I want to go somewhere and I want to be with local people.
Yeah.
And I want to, you know, I always imagine that I'm going to meet like some random people, and they're going to turn out to be great friends, and they're going to invite me to their grandma's house for Sunday dinner, and it's going to be the best, right? and it never happens, but it's okay. But I try, at least when I travel, like I try to make a point to speak with people, and I try to make a point to find things that are not in the center of town, that, you know, it's just, it's really easy. I guess I want to say it's really easy to have a shallow experience when you're traveling, but I think it's just as easy to go deeper and to discover what's really there and understand the culture and the language as well.
Exactly. And it is through the language. I don't know if you have experience being in a country where you couldn't speak the language. I remember when I was living in Germany, I arrived without knowing any German. And even if I could communicate in English with everyone, I felt that there was something missing. I felt that I wasn't connecting with the people because I was not using their language, and that create a barrier from them in the way they were seeing me, and also from me in the way I could relate to them.
Right. And I that's a really good point that you're saying, because it changes when you don't speak the language at all, And it whether you're trying or whether you're not trying, you know, it changes the way that people see you.
Yeah.
And I think, like, in your native language, you could be the most educated, decorated, fantastic, lovable, funny, caring, anything person. And you can go to another country and not speak the language, and nobody will see you that way.
Yeah.
And you give people an opportunity to form opinions about you, and you have no way to defend yourself and no way to prove them wrong. And I never really thought about that until just right now. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but you know, I lived in Italy briefly, and I knew I had my college Italian, where my very textbook, proper, you know, language, and I didn't. It had been a while since I was even in college, so it was a struggle. And I was in a small town, and I didn't meet anyone who spoke English. And I could see how people reacted to me. And it was a struggle. It was hard. It was hard for me because I had no way to tell them, like, I'm really nice and I'm funny and, you know, I'm helpful and I love to eat and
yeah,
all this stuff. And it just occurs to me now, like, I still couldn't show as much of myself as I wanted to, you know, and that was really, hard. And I don't mean to make this a therapy session.
No.
But I just say all that to say that I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you grew up near the Camino in Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, did you have an opportunity to speak with travelers at all?
Yes. Well, the opportunity was there, but as I said, I was a very shy human being when I was younger. So I wouldn't really venture myself to talk to people, but there were multiple opportunities. And because the Camino passed through my town, you could see just the pilgrims going with their backpacks and tired looking, and it would be common for me to be in a bar having some drinks with my friends in the evening, and having next to us pilgrims, and you could recognize them basically because they look tired, and they would always be carrying this, you know, the symbol of the Camino.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very often they would just start a conversation or ask questions to either my group of friends or some other people or the bartender. So they were really there to experience something beyond, you know, doing the walk. They really wanted to engage with people. And I found that was really, really nice. I never thought of them as people traveling or tourists. They were doing something. Back then I didn't know exactly what it was, but they were doing something that was very, very meaningful. They were always trying to engage and with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit, I think, the spiritual element of that pilgrimage. I think that was also a very nice element to it.
Do you think that was another thing that helped you, or not helped you, but do you think that was another experience that you had that that inspired you to not only want to see the world, but to also to speak other languages with people?
Yeah, definitely. And that's, I think that's why, I think it was last year, I organized with another colleague, a Camino. We did the Camino with some students. We guided them to do the pilgrimage, and we would practice Spanish and we would walk. And that's all we did, walk and talk. And probably drink some wine, but that's fun. And it was all about the connection. It was beyond communication. It was about connecting or helping them to connect with the place or the places we were passing by through the language. And yeah, like it was a nice experience.
That sounds really beautiful. How long did you end up walking with the students for?
For a week.
Okay.
For a week. So we did, because, yeah, we didn't want to do something very long. So we walked for around 100 kilometers. I don't know how to, like, in miles, but... hundred kilometers, and for 7 days, and we reach the end of the pilgrimage. So we did just the last bit.
Okay.
And we spent 24 hours together. In very often we were sleeping in the same either apartment or shared house, or you know how. Albergues, like a hostel or something. So we spend all the hours in the day together. So yeah, we created a really nice bond.
Yes.
Obviously, and it was a really nice experience. And it was very relaxed because, you know, the only thing you have to do in the Camino when you do a pilgrimage is walk. That's the only thing you have to do. And there is something really, really nice about waking up in the morning and just not having anything in your agenda other than walking. That alone was one of the best experiences in my life. And then for the students, from their perspective, they were exposed to the language, but we never had a lesson. We're just having conversations while walking, which is very nice, you know, because you have 6 hour walk ahead of you. Right. So there is no rush. You know, it's not like when you have a 1 hour lesson with your teacher, you really want to talk or you really want to ask a question but in this context, you have all the time in the world to talk, to learn, to ask your questions. It was a really, really nice experience.
It sounds like a dream.
Well, it was for me. And I think that my students, they left very happy. Some of them cried. I did cry for sure. I just didn't want to stop that.
That really sounds like something, you know, you're the second person to mention the Camino to me, or that I've spoken about the Camino with this year. And I didn't hear about it probably until a couple of years ago. And it sounds so interesting to me because I love to walk like everywhere, but it just sounds like such a full, complete experience to have. And I can only imagine if you're, like you said, you're walking and talking for 6 hours, you got to feel something. Like, you've got to feel so much. So crying at the end makes complete sense because it's such like a once in a lifetime experience, I think. So you've mentioned that you had some teaching, you taught in France for a little bit.
Yeah.
How was that? What was that like? And did you have any... Did you have any French before you went off to teach there?
I did, I think, an intensive month before I landed in France. So I could say a little bit. I could communicate a little bit, enough. But it was my first time teaching in a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wild.
Oh, no.
I have to say. But that really tested me. So since I was little, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And that was the first time I got to test that. And I remember the first months. So I spent the whole school year in that high school. And I remember the first months. Me also being a very shy person, and that plays a role as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was just, the first days I cried when I got home, thinking I cannot teach properly. I just cannot do it.
Mm.
This is so hard. I don't know. I what am I going to do if I'm not a teacher? Then now I have to think again. What am I going to do in the future? that was tough. But then I practiced, right? I got to learn how to teach, and at the end, I got the hang of it. And my students learned something. So. It was interesting. Also, I was 20 something. I was 24, I think. So I was right after university, and my students were teenagers from 14 to 16 or 18.
Mm.
And in some cases, the guys, mainly, they were super big. I'm a small person. I'm small human. And my face is quite, like, I look younger than I am. Which has never been a problem until that time when the students were looking at me, a shy, small girl who looks younger than them.
Yeah,
they were not respecting me at all, and I could understand, like, it was understandable, but they were ignoring me. That was the whole thing.
Yeah. So how long do you think that it was until you really got the hang of what you were doing, and you felt like your students were reacting and responding to your lessons?
It took a while, but I would say probably a few months, and having the support of some other teachers where I talked to, and I just asked for advice. I asked them, what can I do in this situation? And I got a really good advice from other teacher. She also was shy. And she told me that I had to take lessons as if I was an actress. I had to put on a mask. Like I had to be a different person. Mm. I couldn't be the shy, very quiet human. I had to be someone else. So it worked. I started going to my lessons as if they were a theater piece that I had my role, and I was the teacher, and I was an outgoing, louder person. And I got to internalize that. And at the beginning, now I present myself as I am. I found my way of being myself and still be a good teacher. But it took me a good couple of years or more to be a completely different person. When I was in the lesson, when I was teaching, I could speak loudly. I would be confident, and I wouldn't be like that with my friends. And I remember one time when I was already teaching at home online. That's what I do now. I remember once my mother-in-law, she was at home and I was teaching. And she always knew me as a shy person and speak very, very, you know, very low and be very, very quiet. But I was teaching, and when she passed by the room, she heard me teaching. And when I finished the lesson, she said, "Well, you sound like a completely different person. You are very, like," I was making jokes, I was laughing, I was with a different, completely different tone. Took a while now to be the same person in my personal life, yeah, and my professional life, but just, it's just a journey, it's just practice.
I guess so. I think that's all we can do is just keep trying and figure out what works and what doesn't work. So you also mentioned that you had a little bit of other languages like Chinese, Arabic, German, and Irish. How did these languages come into your life?
Well, in different contexts, Chinese was the first one that I was very curious about, and I had the opportunity to learn in university. They were offering, like, they had the opportunity, like, they have teachers for Chinese. I thought, well, let's try and see. And see. So I learned for a semester.
Cool.
So obviously I cannot communicate, but I learned some basics, and I learned writing, and I loved the fact that the teacher brought culture as well. And we learned Chinese, Tai Chi, and it was a nice experience. Just to, you know, what's the expression, like, to immerse my toes in the water to see a little bit.
Like to dip your toes in.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was nice. And then that was just plain curiosity and see how it was. But then Arabic, I was interested in learning because at that time I was volunteering to teach Spanish for immigrants that were coming from North Africa.
Okay.
So I was just hearing them, and I wanted to be able to communicate a little bit with them and to make things easier, because obviously they were not in a great situation. They just arrived in Spain and it was difficult. So I wanted to be a friendly person, and the only way I know how is through communicating in their language.
Mm-hmm.
But communicating was very difficult because Arabic is not an easy language for me. Spanish. But I could say a few things, and that was okay.
Yeah.
Then German, because mm-hmm. I was in Germany, so I felt that I had to, but I never really loved the language. I never really fell in love with it, so I stopped. But Irish is just because I'm living in Ireland, I do not need to speak Irish because everybody... their language is English, the language they communicate in. Mm-hmm. You won't even hear Irish spoken unless you go to certain areas, rural areas, or maybe in some specific channels in the radio. But I love this country and everything that goes with it. And learning Irish is a way for me to connect deeper with the land and the people. And I'm in love with the language, how it sounds. It is also really difficult, and I am still trying to make sense of the structure because it's super strange to me still, but I love it. It gives me such a pleasure when I take this, and I take very little time. I'm going very slow. I'm the slow type in general, so I sometimes take maybe 15 minutes and try to read a couple of sentences and understand the structure and making sense of it and memorize a few words. But it's just so, so nice. It soothes my soul.
What tools are you using specifically to help you learn Irish?
I use a lot of poetry, I have to say. I like, that's the way for me, that's my access point. So I have a few books, bilingual books, in Irish and English. And I try to get books that are not translations, that is, that the poet wrote in Irish and the same poet wrote in English. Mm. So I get, as we were saying, talking at the beginning, I get that it's not a translation, it's just different ways of expressing the same idea, the same reality. And I could spend hours and hours with the same poem, just trying to decipher the words. And then, of course, I have a couple of grammar books that I consume very slowly because they are not fun. It's just plain grammar. But it's useful and it's there. And it has to be a part of the language. But I like to, you know, go very, very little by little with the grammar. I am just into the, because I don't have an ending goal. I am just learning Irish for the sake of it, for the pleasure of understanding more.
Yeah.
I don't have any communication purpose with it. I may never have a conversation in Irish, and that's okay. I just want to understand more. So I am doing it in a way that makes me happy and gives me pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And poetry is my way, but obviously it's not the most efficient way of doing it.
But if it's working for you, then that's what matters.
It is, yeah. It's fine.
Do you have anyone that if you did want to have a little small conversation with in Irish, do you know anyone, or do you have any? Is there like any cultural centers that you could maybe find someone to just have a little chit chat with in Irish?
Yeah. There are all these centers where it's just organizations where they offer and space to have conversation in Irish because they want to obviously keep the language alive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all over the country. And also family, my in-laws, they speak Irish, not okay. with me, and obviously, but if I wanted to, they would be very happy to do so.
Yeah. That's a really great resource that you have there. And they must be so what's the word I'm looking for? They must be so happy that you are falling in love with their culture too and with their language. So I think that's really special. So I want to hear all about embodied language, and I want to hear about teaching Spanish. Tell me everything. How did you get started? Tell me what some of your methods are. Well, we've talked about some of your methods, but tell me what kind of students you have and where you hope to go in the future.
Well, my students are just people who want to express confidently, and they tend to be students who have been learning Spanish for a while and still struggle to express themselves. And that's something that we mentioned before. I think you said that when you were in Italy, that you couldn't express or communicate to people that you were funny and that you wanted to help and that you were nice. And that is what my students feel. They know a lot of Spanish, they know a lot of grammar, and they have a lot of vocabulary. But then when they are confronted in a conversation with native speakers, they just feel unable or not confident enough to express who they are. They can communicate, they can have a conversation, yes, but they feel that, that they are not being seen in the language. So what I do on, is helping them to find that confidence. And that looks differently for every student. So we work on ways that and strategies that we can practice when we are in the context of a conversation with native speakers. Mm-hmm. And those strategies always are around going back to the body instead of monitoring what the other person is doing or saying. That's something that I feel we tend to do when we are in a conversation. And that's fine. When we are in a conversation, we are always paying attention to the other person, the gestures, and if they understand us or not, and that's fine. And we are also, when we are having a conversation, we are in our heads thinking what we want to say, instead of just being in the conversation, listening with all our senses to what the other person is saying.
Right.
And connecting with ourselves to understand how we are feeling, if we are feeling tense in any way, where is this tension coming from? Is it coming from us, or is it coming from the other person? What is it that we really want to say? Because I find that sometimes we say things that we don't want to say. I don't know if you have ever said yes when you wanted to say no. I know I have.
Yes.
I know I have said things or reacted, answered questions without checking with myself. And therefore giving an answer that wasn't accurate. So what I like to do is to help my students to find this way of taking a second to check in with themselves so that they can relax. And relaxing is essential. If you want to communicate and access the storage, the information that is in your brain, you have to be relaxed. If there are nerves, the channel is blocked, right? So I help them to be relaxed, how to be relaxed, and also how to check in with themselves. That's one part of the. That is when we are in communication with someone, but also I help them or guide them to find their own voice, to find their own way of expressing in Spanish. So we do journaling, we do a lot of creative writing, we do poetry, because obviously poetry has to be in my life. So... they always enjoy it when they lose the fear and when they just take it at something that is playful. We are all poets. I do believe that. And I had occasions where the student, they have been impressed with the poem they wrote in Spanish because they didn't expect.
Right.
They could write it, and sometimes they didn't even expect what they wrote. And that's just, for me, it's a privilege to witness that and to help. I think my mission in life is just to help people to connect with their inner poet and express from that place where you are communicating something that you have mulled over, and you are communicating with this exact word that is going to evoke an emotion and an image in the person you are talking to. And that means just to slowing down. You slow down the communication to a point of that you are just super, super accurate. And you are communicating, like, you're making a nice sentence that has a rhythm or has your personality. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. I think that's, everything you're saying is so important, and I'm really glad that we're having this conversation. And as you're talking, I'm listening to you, and I'm like, this is what has been missing from my life for a long time. I think that's what's been missing from my life and my journeys with other languages, is that I haven't really taken the time to say, or to check in with myself and to wonder, like, why do I want to learn this? What am I going to get out of this? And I haven't really focused on, I haven't focused on that, but I also haven't focused on getting in touch with myself to accurately communicate in these other languages. And I've talked about this before on other episodes, but I've been struggling with French my whole life. Like, I just have this immense, massive, like, brain block. Like, I just can't, I cannot come out with any French coherently unless I'm like lost or I'm panicking or something like that. And it's so, so strange, because I can read in French. I can, you know, I can listen to someone and I can understand most of what's being said, but forming my own thoughts in French is the hardest, hardest thing for me. And I think that's because, like what you said, as I'm listening to you, I don't know myself in French. I don't know what is my personality in the French language. And I haven't given myself that time to explore that, you know? And I'm also thinking to what you said about not being nervous and not having that anxiety when speaking. I think it's hard enough, especially if you're a nervous person or you're introverted or you're shy, it's hard enough to do it in your native tongue.
Yep.
And then when you have to do it in another language, you're like, oh God. And like, I can think of times where even when I've attempted to speak Spanish, you know, my Spanish is not very good at all. But times I've attempted to speak Spanish, someone's speaking to me and all I'm thinking is, okay, how do I not sound so stupid responding? And what is the word for la, 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 la? And that's just, it's wrong. Like, it feels wrong as I'm doing it, but I can't help it, you know? And I'm saying all of this to say that I like your process, and I like the way that you think about it. And I hope that anyone listening will reach out to you, number one, if they're learning Spanish, reach out. But I also hope that they'll just take, you know, for any language that they're trying to learn, they'll take away this mindful approach and this approach of understanding how to, you know, how to get over this and essentially love the journey that they're on and figure themselves out.
Hmm. Yeah, I see the language as a person, like giving the language you're learning a personality and how you relate to that language, I think is something that helps me or has helped me to fall back in love with English, which was, I think that for me, what I am able to do now and communicate now, I can communicate confidently in English, regardless of the perfection of the language in which I communicate in the language. Mm-hmm. And that is what I want for my students. I don't want my students to be able to have a perfect Spanish mm-hmm. production. I don't care if they make mistakes, as long as obviously the message comes across. What I want them to be is to feel confident and feeling seen when expressing in that language. And that is something that I didn't have for many, many, many years in English. Mm. It was the language I was using. I could use it, but I still felt anxious when I had to speak in any context. I felt that I wasn't expressing myself. I didn't even know who I was in English. And now it is a whole different story. So what I am just doing is the practices I did on myself.
Mm.
And how I learned to communicate confidently and to be connected with myself through English and now any other language.
So for people who are listening that I just told them to get in touch with you, please tell us where we can find you and how we can reach you.
Okay, well, I have my website, which is my full name, mariaortegagarcia.com. And that's the same for Instagram. I like Instagram a lot. Mm. And it is just my name, maria.ortega.garcia. And that's the best way to find me.
I will put links to your website and I will put a link to your Instagram in the show notes to make it very easy for everyone to get in touch. I know that Spanish is a very popular language and a lot of people are looking to learn Spanish. So I hope that if you're listening, you'll get in touch because this is a really fantastic, fantastic way of thinking about language. And I'm really happy that we're having this conversation. I've said it twice already, but I'm so happy. Yeah. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. And I was thinking, like, I'm glad that we're actually talking about this. And I didn't really want to ask you about, like, oh, tell me it's, you know, the Spanish way of saying this versus, you know, Spanish way of saying that. And you know, that's also valid, but I was really interested in your method and in your ethos and your approach. So thank you so much for sharing that with me and with all of us who were listening.
Thank you. I'm really happy that you gave me the opportunity. I'm always happy and grateful to have the opportunity to talk about languages and talk about different approaches, mostly for introverts, because I think this way
we need help.
Yeah, we do. I can more or less, how would you say, not goal-oriented approach to languages.
Yeah.
Where it is about pleasure and connecting with yourself and slow, please, let's slow down.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. So I like to end each episode by asking the same question and get ready.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay. It's an easy one. Do you have any jokes, swear words, tongue twisters, slang words, idioms, or advice in Spanish that you like and want to share?
I'm going to give you a tongue twister.
Oh, yeah.
I prepared. I have one. Okay.
Okay.
It's not difficult. It's quite easy.
Okay.
So I start. ¿Cómo, cómo? ¿Cómo, cómo, cómo? That's it.
That's it? So it's ¿cómo, cómo? ¿Cómo, cómo, cómo?
Yeah. ¿Cómo, cómo? And that's a question. ¿Cómo, cómo?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer would be ¿cómo, cómo, cómo?
¿Cómo, cómo, cómo?
So it's just the same word five times.
I like that. Can you say it five times fast?
¿Cómo, cómo? ¿Cómo, cómo, cómo? And it means
mm-hmm.
How do I eat? I eat like I eat.
Oh.
So it's it's four ways, four different meanings to the same word.
So como is like how, but it's also comer.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I understand. And I'm proud of myself for remembering comer because...
Yeah.
Because I am still trying. Well, Maria, this has been an absolute delight talking to you about language today. And I am so glad that you had the time and that you were able to talk to me about your methods and to tell us your story. Thank you for sharing words about your method and sharing your story with us. And I'm certain that a lot of people are going to relate to what you've had to say.
Well, that would be great. And I am really, really grateful that you gave me the opportunity. As I said, I always love to talk about languages and the wonderful things that happen when we engage with them.
Yeah, absolutely. You never know what can happen if you take a step outside of your mother tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the best way to say goodbye?
I would say hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Yeah.
Okay. I know there's a lot of ways to say goodbye in Spanish, but hasta luego, if that fits the current situation, I want to say gracias y hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.